discovering stories of courage, determination, and hope. Welcome to Faith Radio's On the Road. Now, here's Ryan Thomas.
Life is short, I want to live it well. One life, one story to tell. Life is short, I want to live it well. And you're the one I'm living for.
Well, in this new year, tensions sadly are high. Patience is low, and goodwill seems hard to come by. Unity can seem farther away than ever. But Pastor Greg Holder calls us to take a look back and to rediscover the real value Jesus and his early followers placed on community. Greg is the lead pastor of The Crossing, a thriving church in St. Louis, Missouri, and in his new book, The Genius of One, God's Answer for Our Fractured World, Greg offers a path to see and relate to one another in emotionally and spiritually healthy ways, so we can model a better way of loving one another in a fractured world. And we offer the warmest of welcomes to Pastor Greg Holder on today's On the Road. It's great to have you here, brother. How's life treating you today, sir?
It's good, Ryan, and I so appreciate being with you and being with your listeners.
Well, understanding where you're coming from with this topic really starts when you realize that as pastor there in St. Louis, you had to grapple with the aftermath of the shooting death of Michael Brown and the unrest that followed in Ferguson, Missouri back in the fall of 2014. And just starting that conversation, a startling experience to confront in a way. I think that for many of us, St. Louis is so often associated with this sort of ideal of Midwestern peacefulness. Was it disorienting at first to grapple with such profound division in your city?
To see what happened in the aftermath of Ferguson, which really became sort of an iconic sort of moment for our country to go, wow, we are probably more divided than we were admitting out loud.
Yeah.
And so there is clearly that divide that is there. But to be honest with you, I even saw that divide running through my Christian brothers and sisters, with people not really even knowing how to react to this. And I would say, if you'll allow me to, I think it's even bigger than that. You know, the opening line of the book is, we have forgotten how to get along. And the truth is, that's not exactly a newsflash. And in fact, that kind of fracturedness that we talk about has really been there since we rebelled against our loving God, right? I mean, it's always been there in our relationships. But golly, it seems like it's getting worse. And I don't know if that's because we have 7 billion plus people on the planet, or if it's because of social media, or if it's because of the various issues that seem to be sitting right there on the surface. But the truth is, no one in this world seems to be getting along very well. And to be honest, the reason I felt God led me to the book was, in so many ways, people now just kind of refer to this as the new normal. And I don't think that's true, Ryan. I believe that we as followers of Jesus are supposed to take the lead. We're supposed to show people a different way to do this. I'm not being naive, but I am telling you, there is a love that is winsome and healing that could draw people back to the answer that they're looking for. I know that sounds naive, but that's really the premise of the book.
It's not naive. I think it sounds powerful. And you're absolutely right. You even see it in comment sections and just our inability to even type to each other on social media. In terms of Ferguson, I mean, how did you begin to address it with your church? How did you try to bring that healing? Because a lot of folks really did look to you and hear from you during that time. What were sort of the guiding principles that you used to address those divisions, even in your church and community?
I spent some of my formative years at a church in Ferguson. So when all of this sort of, began to blow up, it was really personal for me. And I immediately called some of the people living in Ferguson, some of the churches in Ferguson, and said, how can we help? How can we move in? And it was throughout that process that some of the other things at our church, which is probably about 20 or so minutes away from Ferguson, I invited our folks into this. But if I could give you sort of the background for the whole thing, and then we'll jump into the Ferguson thing. it goes back to a prayer that Jesus prayed on the worst night of his life. I mean, in John 17, and your listeners will know this, I knew this, but for some reason, I seem to have forgotten it. But in John 17, Jesus has dismissed the betrayer. He's had his close meal with his disciples. There's something between the upper room and the Garden of Gethsemane. And in John 17, he prays a prayer for us. He prays for himself, he prays for his disciples, and then he prays for us. And what he prays is, Father, may they be one as you and I are one. He doesn't say that we would be powerful or clever or funny or popular or wealthy. He prays that we would be one as he and the Father are one, which is a huge thing. And we actually unpack that, I hope, in an interesting way at the beginning of the book. What does it mean for you and I, Ryan, to actually love each other, to engage each other the way the Father and the Son and the Spirit do? I mean, it's a pretty tall order if you think about it.
Yeah.
But that's Jesus' prayer for us. And then he says, I pray that they may be one so that the world will know that you sent me. So apparently how you and I react to everything in this world, how you and I relate to each other as brothers in Christ, is somehow supposed to give people a sense of, a taste of, what it is to know the love of God. So if you start with that as the background, then I reach out to our brothers and sisters in Ferguson and say, how can we help? Well, in many ways, what they said up front was, we just need you to pray. We don't need you to move in. We don't need you to do anything. You're not a, you know, just start there. But over time, what happened was we were able to basically convene groups of people together. And I'm talking now before the grand jury announcement. So this is really in real time. And we brought together by our just invitation, off the radar. Media was not allowed to be there. In fact, that was one of the ground rules. Nobody can, like, have a press conference. Nobody can tell people we're meeting. And we met in the fellowship hall of one of the churches there in Ferguson. One of the jokes, if you read the book that I mentioned about this, is there wasn't a lot of fellowship in that fellowship hall that night. Because, and in fact, there were a lot of words that, frankly, I'm not sure had ever been said in that fellowship hall before. Because we invited people who really were across the spectrum. I have a friend in Baltimore who we worked together a lot on some of these race relation issues, David Anderson. And I said, David, will you come, as an African-American pastor, will you come and stand with me, and let's enter into this? So we invited pastors, educators, community leaders, mayors, police chiefs, and to be honest with you, the leaders of many of these protests that were happening on the streets. And to be honest with you, it was the only time that they had ever been in a room together. And it was quite a sight to behold. And part of what we learned was there are two or three things that we can start with, and it's not just related to Ferguson. But one of them is this idea of, can we create space for a dialogue that won't happen elsewhere? So we gathered around a table. And again, I want to say this for anyone who right now is feeling just a little bit cynical about this and going, well, that doesn't matter. I mean, we've all talked this thing out. I'm telling you that there is a power of sitting down at the table face-to-face with each other. One of the things that we learned was, and this is my friend Dr. Anderson's thought here, because he said to us, distance demonizes. So when I look at somebody from way far off, I can see them as somebody that I don't agree with their political stance, I don't agree with their reactions, I don't agree with anything. But the truth is, when we're sitting across from the table from each other, now all of a sudden we're actually people. And this is where it really starts to mess with you. You are somebody for whom Christ died. And so we begin to have this conversation, and I start to hear stories. And I won't go into great detail. It's in the book. But in that chapter, what you'll see is there were protesters and leaders in the police community that actually began to share things with each other. And all of a sudden, it was like, oh, when you do that, that's horrible. Don't do that. And then somebody else would say, but you do understand that I have a job to do, and that, like, I have kids and I have a wife, and when you threaten and when you say those things, you're saying that to my kids and to my wife. and light bulbs began to go off around the room. Now, that was before the grand jury announcement. And so some of your listeners would be saying, well, apparently it didn't do any good. I would humbly disagree. The truth is that no matter what you saw in the media, there was definitely an outcry. There was definitely even an outbreak of violence. But there were no lives lost. And I can tell you behind the scenes that there were people, there were police officers and protesters that actually exchanged phone numbers. And this is the most amazing thing. And they said, listen, when all of this starts to go down, and it will, can we text each other? Because I want you to be out of harm's way. I want you to know when something's going to happen so that you can help us in this area. And it was the most extraordinary thing that happened because people had space where they could talk to each other. Now, the next thing I would say is, it can't just be talk. In 1 John, we're told not to just love in word, but to love in deed. So we have to now create these collaborations that won't happen elsewhere. And in the aftermath of Ferguson, we began to work with churches and education systems and school districts to say, how do we work long-term to begin to pour into some of these young people who, quite frankly, are out of hope, and they feel like nobody cares, and nobody understands them. And so we're even now in the process of working together at local school systems, bringing in law enforcement officers to help us with this. Our focus, frankly, is a reading initiative. It's just one of many that you could do. But what we're trying to do is to build bridges together. And then the last thing is, really, honestly, Ryan, you have to endure with a tenacious hope that isn't found elsewhere. Now, that's not earth-shattering, but I'll tell you this. Part of what we tell our church is that we are going to have to take a generational view of this. And they will hear me say this. We're going to do the right thing for a long time. And maybe our kids or our grandkids will begin to see some things happening differently. What you and I are experiencing in our world, and it's not just Ferguson, I think that's what we found post-Ferguson, was that there are a number of people in a number of cities who are going, well, wow, we really are struggling with things. Well, I would say and suggest that it is the people of God, it is the followers of Jesus that can get involved, get their hands dirty, and they can begin to do some things with other people that they never thought they would partner with. But you'll have to do it for a long time. And if the followers of Jesus can't endure with a hope, if we can't take the long view, then I don't think anyone can.
It's such a powerful illustration, as you say, to go from just talking about what to do and to express what was done. It's an amazing story. We're here with Pastor Greg Holder. If you're just tuning in, he's the lead pastor of the Crossing Church in St. Louis, and he's authored The Genius of One, God's Answer for Our Fractured World. Now, you began to address it there just a moment ago, and it's maybe out of a lot of intriguing places to go with this book, the question I'm most intrigued to hear you answer, sir, because you say what we need is for Christians to be able to disagree differently than the rest of the world, but of course you write much about it, but give us a sketch of how we can begin to do that, because it is not easy.
If you read the book, it doesn't end in a group hug. This is not some warm, snuggly, let's sing kumbaya around the campfire moment. I know this is difficult, but I happen to believe that when Jesus prayed that prayer, he meant it, and I think he meant it for us. So really, once you get past the beginning chapters, which I hope begins to unpack really the mystery and the beauty of what it means to love each other and the plan of what it means for us to function together as one, and you have gifts that I don't have, and I need to champion those gifts, and I need to lean into those gifts, and you need to trust that God has gifted me. How practical is that in our local churches? How practical is that in our small groups, in our families, in our neighborhoods? But the bottom line, actually, where we start is this idea of humility. You and I have to understand that we actually need each other, that God placed us in each other's lives for a reason.
Right.
It's a great place to start. And so, one of the things that folks have told me that kind of helps with the book is but it's chock full of stories. It's not just this here, this is what you do. I hope it's practical. I mean, the biggest section in the book is called Nuts and Bolts. So I hope it's practical. But there's a bunch of stories in there. And part of those stories have to do with things that maybe we aren't doing well and things that we are doing well. But as you and I are in relationship with each other, if we start with humility, you know, and Paul in Romans 12 says, you know, don't think more highly of yourself than you ought to, which, if you'll allow me to give you the Greg translation, is don't get the big head about yourself. You're not that big of a deal, right? I'm not that big of a deal. And if I can wake up every day and remember that, all of a sudden, I need you. And you and I get to do something together that is much greater than if I charge through this day on my own. I know we've heard that before, but we've got to lean into this and be conscious of this. I think there are ways that, I think the most surprising part of the book for some folks, honestly, has been the amount of time that I spend on the power of our words. Now, I know I mentioned that earlier, but there's a whole chapter, frankly, devoted to gossip. And I don't mean to be, you know, I don't mean to be offensive, and please forgive me if your listeners disagree, forgive me, but I believe sometimes the gossip is just the poison that is running through our churches and our small groups and our relationships in the neighborhood and our relationships at school and at home. And we just seem to look the other way. It's almost as if we think that that's just a lesser sin. So there's a story in the book that you might remember where I was in India. And it's a crazy story. And it's all true. But I'm in India, and because of some of the work I was doing there, one of our friends had arranged for a little bit of a surprise for us. So I'm rounding the corner in this very hot, sultry, jungly kind of setting. And sure enough, there is a snake charmer. In fact, there's three of them in a row. And they're sitting there, and they're playing these little flutes, and it sounds just like you think it would in your head. And they look just like they were cast out of a movie. And everybody's having, you know, they're kind of fascinated with it all. And because I'm my personality and the nature of who I am, I'm now trying to kind of sneak around behind these guys and get a photo op, right, so that everybody's laughing and going, oh, there's Greg. He's kind of close to the snake charmers. And, you know, I'll admit it. Straight on, I was looking for a laugh. And at that point, the older man who has this big white beard, and he's got this red bandana on, and I promise you, he looked like just what you think someone would look like if they cast him in the movies. He looks up at me with a grin, and he pats on the ground and tells me to sit down next to him. Well, I went ahead and planned on that. And now everybody's kind of egging me on, but I'm already in, right? So I sit down nervously, and I'm not kidding you, Ryan. He puts a couple of like these exotic snakes around my neck, and I'm like, oh boy, here we go.
What?
Yeah, and I don't even know what they are. And these other guys have these snakes that they're, you know, whatever they're doing with, and I'm like, Lord, please protect me. I got in way over my head. But I'm getting their photos, and then all of a sudden, he takes this lid off of this container. This is a true story. And a cobra comes up out of that container. This is maybe 12, 18 inches from my leg. And then he scoots it closer. Now, here's the thing. I remember the hiss. I don't know how close you've been to a cobra. I remember this thing, the hood of this thing. I remember looking at it. I remember freezing. I kept telling my body to move, and I couldn't move. But the thing I'll never forget is this: the color of those cobra's eyes. Now, here's what I didn't know. The color of those eyes were like a blue, like a milky blue. I found out later the reason they were blue was because he was getting ready to shed his skin. That's what happens when snakes or cobras molt. And
sure.
So he's obviously getting ready to... And I'm like, well, I didn't know that, and I never, you know, I didn't check back with him later, so that was the only time I saw that cobra. But I remember the color of his eyes. Now, why would that matter? Because in Romans after one, Paul goes through an entire list of sins that are just really not good sins at all. I mean, they're horrible sins. I mean, God haters and murderers. I mean, you see all sorts of things in there that you're going, oh boy, these are the bad sins. This is a bad list. And in the middle of that is this idea of gossipers and murmurers. We dismiss it as just being a whisper. We dismiss it as, oh, well, I'm just telling you a little story about somebody. But the truth is, if you and I are close enough, if I'm close enough to tell the color of a cobra's eyes, I'm too close. And one of the things that I honestly believe is that if we as Christians just together said, I will vow there will be no more gossip that comes out of my mouth. I'm not going to wrap it in Christianese. I'm not going to try to say something and pass it off as, oh, can you pray for brother so-and-so? Because, and then I tell basically gossip. I'm no longer going to comment on something in an ugly way. I'm no longer. Do you have any idea what a revolution that would be if you and I vowed, I'm not doing that anymore. So that's just a great example to me how we can create a healthier culture. There's some practical in there, but a lot of small groups are using this to say, okay, let's work through this, and together, there's 3 or 4 or 5 points in here that we can begin to basically pull gossip out of the culture of our small group, out of our family, out of our neighborhood, our locker room, our church. I got to tell you, well, that alone has been revolutionary in some people's lives, because now it's safer for you and I to have conversations, even if we don't agree on something. When I leave the room, I know you're going to honor me. Can you get a sense of just how it feels different? You and I can have a difficult conversation. We might not even agree at the end of the conversation. God, give us wisdom. We're going to keep talking about this. But when I leave the room, I don't have to worry about Ryan whispering about me.
Yeah.
I know it sounds like common sense, but it is extraordinarily helpful to a lot of different groups. And that's just one example of one of the chapters where you go, okay, we can do this differently.
Man, that really is convicting, I must say. It hits very close to home for so many of us, something that's so easy to do, but... Wow, this is such a practical book, a great book with some amazing stories, and you really do have it all. As you heard there, the snakes, there are sharks as well. This is not a run-of-the-mill work here. The Genius of One, God's Answer for Our Fractured World, from the lead pastor of the Crossing Church in St. Louis, Missouri, Pastor Greg Holder. And sir, these conversations do tend to go fairly quickly, but it's been such a pleasure to have you. And before we say goodbye, where's the best place to go to learn more about you, your ministry, and pick up a copy of the book, sir?
Well, first of all, thank you, Ryan. I know time goes by quickly, but thank you. And God bless you and your listeners. And I hope you do help us start this revolution. It's happening both here in the U.S., but it's happening around the world. I can tell you in places like Sierra Leone and Liberia and India, pastors are saying, let's do this, and let's do this as small groups. So the easiest way to do that, you can go to Amazon.com. You can go to navpress.com. Any of your Christian bookstores should be able to get this for you. And we're just inviting churches to help us with this. And please let me know how you're doing with this. The easiest way to do that is gregholder.com. It's G-R-E-G, holder.com. And let me know how you're doing with this, because I hope we look back on this and go, wait, the church is actually doing this differently now. And we can all say we knew when God began to do something important in our relationships, that quite honestly, the 21st century is aching for. So gregholder.com is the easiest way for you to find out more about this.
Sir, Pastor Greg Holder, once more, the Genius of One, God's Answer for Our Fractured World. What a pleasure to get to know you a little bit today, sir. Thanks so much for your time.
Ryan, thank you very much, and God bless you.
Thanks for sharing in the story of this latest episode of Faith Radio's On the Road. For more on today's conversation and the full podcast archive of all our episodes, look for On the Road when you visit myfaithradio.com.